Welcome, Lund Loyalists, to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's John.
What's happening? Happy Friday, episode 177. As you can see, we are 81 games in. I'm no math whiz, but 81, 162, midway point of the season, mid-season report cards, and I have report cards. I have a report card. It's a long one. We're going to discuss it. I need your feedback on it. What do you think of the Giants' first half of the season? Let me know on that. There's Bob Melvin. This is episode 177. Thank you so much for joining us. John Lund Unleashed on a Friday edition of the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 177. Swept by the fish. That's not great. Midseason grades, as I said, broken bat bit. Mike Kruka wasn't very happy with it. We'll play it for you. Get your thoughts. Mike Dunleavy speaks. The Warriors' second round success. They hope it continues as they've had it really good. Those odds that everybody likes to click on are out. They're not good for the Warriors if you like Giannis. The Ace Bailey thing is kind of interesting. What's going on in Utah? I got some thoughts on that. Random things happen throughout the show, and really good caboose today. Cockpit sex and my first job. And the only reason my first job is I saw a video yesterday. I was flipping through videos and it reminded me of it. So I've got that as well. What else? Is there anything else that I didn't put up on the board today that I wanted to discuss? I think that is it today, but lots of good stuff going on today. Did want to mention, by the way, before we get out to roll call today, and by the way, please make sure you subscribe, John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. If you're watching on X, thank you, thank you, thank you. For watching on Instagram, thank you. At John Lund Radio, consider migrating over and hanging out with the crew here. Got a great chat room, got a great community that we have built here, and it continues to grow every single day. So come on over to John Lund Unleashed, please. Make sure you got those alerts on because we send stuff out throughout the day, and also hit a like so that the algorithm likes us. Much appreciated on that. Bay Area Sports Collective, you see that B in the corner there to my left and right, left. The Bay Area Sports Collective, which is my show on there on YouTube, as well as Tom Tolbert, Rod Brooks, a lot of ex-KNBR guys, Polly Mack, Creative Tony, all great shows, as well as former Giant Jeremy Affeldt and the great, and I do mean great, Amy G. So make sure you check out and make sure you subscribe to the Bay Area Sports Collective. I was here yesterday, by the way, before we get started. That is Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, and we talked. He's a big sports guy, by the way. Talked about all a bunch of sports stuff. And as I always tell you, I got my low T. So really, really simple with my low T. Do that blood test, quick procedure, boom, every 4 months. That's all I do. It's really great. I feel great. That's why, you know, I got the energy today because it happens like right away. So low metabolism, it goes faster. You just feel a lot better as you get older. And I was in there yesterday because it was time. So Dr. Riopel says hello. I said, man, every single morning we say hello to you. So I got my low T taken care of for a few months. My wife and it was so funny. That's the QR code you click to and it goes right to his website. If you did not get to the QR code, all you have to do is Google it or use your favorite search engine. Riopel is R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Dr. Jeffrey Riopel in San Ramon. If you're in the East Bay, no brainers. I always tell you, if you're not, completely worth the drive because he does so many great things. It's not just what I talk about. It's not just with my wife with the stem cell. It's not just with my low T. He does all sorts of things for men, women, make you look better, feel better. Make sure you just check it out and go to your favorite search engine and check out Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, Riopel, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, and he'll take care of you. But I was telling him yesterday as he was taking care of me, I said, look, I'm not kidding you because he watches the show. He's a big sports fan. And I told him, I said, look, I'm not just saying that. Like my wife, her elbow, her shoulder, like she doesn't have to ice down anymore. It's awesome. She was telling me in Vegas because he had heard it, but he's like, Rick, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, no, we were walking in Vegas. And she goes, I could never do this without Dr. Riopel because, you know, we were walking, we were shopping, all sorts of stuff that people do on the strip or whatever. And, you know, you do tons of walking in Vegas. And she just turned to me at one point. We were maybe an hour into just cruising around, walking around, and she's like, I'd be done. I'd be sitting down. I'd be having a cocktail at the bar, whatever. She's like, I'm totally good, which is awesome. So it is Dr. Jeffrey Riopel. And that stem cell stuff, man, he was telling me all about it. We were talking a little bit more about it. Even his son is going to be doing it. He's a doc. So It works, man. We're not just talking about it. If you've got pain, stem cells the way to go. So check out my friend, Dr. Jeffrey Riepel, fine sponsor of the program. All right, let's get to out to everybody on a Friday edition. Happy Friday to everybody. I hope everybody's doing great. Weather is good today. Looking nice, sunny outside today in the Bay Area. It's awesome. Thanks to Fiend. It's good to see you for a while. Thanks for joining the show today. Barry's here. John Joseph. Hello, John Joseph. Kyle, Enrique, Daniel from the 916. Hello, Kenny. Kenny, they got to get out of June, man. Christopher, good to see you, my friend. Pine Needle is here this morning. Jake, let's trade Kuminga for that first round draft pick that went to Utah and doesn't want to be there. Ooh, Pine, good thinking, bro. Ace Bailey, how about this? You want Jonathan Kuminga? Give us Ace Bailey. That's not a bad idea. I got a video on that. And look, I lived in Salt Lake City, so I'm going to say that I was an expert on it. This isn't new. Players don't want to go to Utah. They just don't, man. When everything closes at about 10 o'clock, when you can't get anything to eat after about 10 o'clock, when you can't get a cocktail after midnight, when it's conservative as the state is. And look, it's a beautiful, beautiful, not to go on a tangent here, but it's a beautiful, beautiful state. Hiking, outdoors, lakes, recreation, hunting, the skiing is unbelievable. It's an awesome place, man. It's a great place to be if you love the outdoors. But if you're a young kid that's, what, Ace Bailey's, what, 18, and you want to go out on the town and meet people and do certain things and live in a big city, and that's it's not that. And it's never going to be that. And certain guys just don't want to play there. I mean, that's just what it is. And I'm not going to, like I said, we're doing roll call right now, but let me just throw one thing on the board on that, and then I'll just move on. And we'll talk about it in its proper order in on the chalkboard there. But does this look like a guy that wants to be in Utah? I mean, he was just drafted. It's one of the, it's supposed to be the happiest day of his life, right? Look at him. Take my picture. He ain't going there, man. Anyway, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but it's just a fascinating story. Even if you're not a Jazz fan, it's interesting. Hello, Vrock. Good to see you. Vrock from the 408 is here this morning. Scott, it is great to see you. Bottom of the pint day. In fact, I should have brought a cocktail in here today. Why not? It's Friday after all. We can do whatever we want. Nobody wants to pay Kuminga. Utah is nice. Yeah, I'm not saying it's not. I lived there. Like I said, we had a beautiful house at the bottom of a canyon. We loved it there. It was cool. But again, I'm a big skier. I like snowboarding. I was out, you know, outdoors, and you know, I did all the stuff that you do in Utah. When you move to a certain place, you kind of adjust to what that place is. You know, if you go to New York City, if you go to the Bay Area, if you go to Salt Lake City, if you go to, like, every city has its thing and has its things, I should say. The reason why it's so expensive here, where I sit today in the Bay Area, is because everything is here. Like certain cities, it's like, well, you got that, but not that. You got this, but not this. In the Bay Area, you pretty much got everything. Yeah, it's expensive as hell to live here. I'm not saying it's not, but you have everything within distance that you want to do, and that's why it's so expensive. But yeah, I'm not ripping it at all. I'm just saying, for an 18-year-old kid, he's going, nah. And he, you know, he told them no. They said, come work out. He said, absolutely not. He wanted to go to Brooklyn or Washington. Anyway, that's one of a million stories today that we got to get into. But I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, hey, Utah, you want Kuminga? You can have Kuminga. Give us that fifth pick in the draft. Kid would like it here. Saying hello from Portland. Very nice, man. By the way, love Portland. I lived up in Portland too. God, I've worked everywhere. There's a place called Huber's, which is awesome. All the one-way streets. Be careful if you're driving in Portland, by the way. Downtown, one way. But there's a place called Huber's, which is this cafe for lunch. And they make these Spanish coffees, and they make them tableside with the fire. It's awesome. Northwest 23rd, by the way, Catalina, if you're up there. Northwest 23rd has a New York slice house that is unbelievable. It has a New York deli up there that is unbelievable. And then they have all the, what Portland is famous for is all the food trucks, tons and tons, and they're really good. Almost all of them are good. But yeah, it's just great people watching up there. Really cool. If you get good weather, like you said, oh, okay, so you know. If you get great weather, then it's like people go, why don't more people live up here? Then it's like, oh, it rains 9 months a year. But when it's nice, when you go up there on a nice day, it is nice, man. It is nice. All right. Good morning to everybody. Sorry, that roll call took a little bit longer than I thought it was going to take. I go off on these tangents already. Random things happen throughout the show if you are new here. Happy Friday to everybody. Let's get that across to everybody. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. All right. Swept by the Fish. That wasn't great. I don't know what else to tell you. I told you that it was a big start for Hayden Birdsong. He sucked. That was the big thing to come out of it. We're going to talk more about the midseason than the sweep by the Fish. But look, let's just start there. There's no good way to put this. And I said this before the series started. You have Miami and you have the White Sox, and the Diamondbacks aren't out of it, but they're hovering around 500. You should be able to do some things here, because then after that, it's Philly, it's LA, it's the Mets. Those are really good teams. And my thought would be, in those 13 games against it was Miami, the White Sox, I don't have it right in front of me, but it's, you know, Arizona's in there. In those 13 games, you would have liked to have seen the Giants go 10-3, 11-2, something like that. Well, they're already 0-3. And it's just a completely unacceptable performance by the Giants. And when we do the grades, it's going to reflect that, because they're now not in a wild card spot. They're not a wild card team, from a team that a few weeks ago, when they were taking on the Dodgers, and we're like, hey, this team, and then they get Devers, who, by the way, that home run to center was incredibly impressive yesterday. The dude can rake. It doesn't matter what yard. I mean, that's one thing in his press conference where he just said, I don't have to change my swing, man. I'm a hitter. People who didn't see Devers play a lot in Boston, now you see it. You're seeing glimpses of it. He's going to be even better and better and better the more he gets comfortable on the Giants. This dude, it doesn't matter what park, man. It doesn't. He could hit in the Grand Canyon. I mean, the guy is one of the top hitters in the league. He goes oppo to left field. He can hit it to dead center field. If he wants to stay away from right field and triples alley, he can do that. I mean, he's just that good. So it's an amazing trade by Buster Posey, and it's going to reflect in Buster's grade, but the rest of these guys got to get it going. And the starting pitching, you got Ray, you got Webb, and you got I don't know. And that's going to reflect as well. But just to start off with everything, just a terrible series. There's just no other way to put it. I mean, you were down in every game. You're going down 3-0, 5-0. Last night or yesterday, they fight back and they tie it. They're down 5-0. They tie it 5-5, and then the bullpen, and you don't normally see that from the bullpen, but the bullpen's leaking a little bit of oil. And it's not that I think that they're overused. We've talked about that all through the first half, right? Are they going to overuse the bullpen? Can they get enough innings from their starters? I'm going to show you when we do grades that the starting pitching is pitching about the average amount of innings, what a lot of teams are pitching in the league, that the bullpen is not overused like it was last year. They had the second highest usage of anybody in baseball last year in their bullpen, and that's why it burned out late in the season. They're not doing that this year. It's just every once in a while you don't see a Tyler Rogers. Like in this series, Tyler Rogers wasn't very good. I've seen enough Sean Jelly. Can we just stop? Can we stop with it? The guy is clearly distracted about what's going on. And to be honest with you, last season was his only good season with the Giants. He was okay, but he hasn't been good really his entire career with the Giants outside of last season. So are we surprised that he's struggling? But we just think these guys go on the field like a robot, and they're just going to pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch. And we all know, we've all been through tough stuff in our life, right? It affects your work. It affects you daily. It's just, it's really hard to just compartmentalize, go out on mound and say, okay, this is the only thing on my mind. The guy needs a break. Clearly he's not pitching well. So, you know, they've got guys. It's not Eric Miller. It's not by and large, it's not, you know, it's not Miller. It's not Rodriguez. Yeah, it's a roller coaster ride. I get it with Duvall. Walker's kind of got to find his thing, but I'm okay with those guys that I just mentioned. It's the guys on the peripheral that I get nervous about. And you can't just use those four guys all the time. Bivens is just okay. I don't love him. I've seen enough Sean Jelly already, and I know the majority of the year he's been in the minors, but I don't need to see any more Sean Jelly. So this comment, the point in saying all this stuff is, you know, you go into a series against Miami and you think the one thing that's on your mind is, can they score enough runs, right? Can they score? Can they score? Can they score? Well, in this, you know, like yesterday, for example, you score 5 runs. The Giants record, I don't have it off the top of my head. I know I have their game notes. In fact, let me just look it up real quick. But it's an ungodly record. It's something like 31-3 or something. So, you know, they scored enough runs in this series, but then the relievers let them down, and you just don't see that. So I'm not going to freak out over that, because I don't think that that's going to become a norm. But the issue is that when, let's see, hang on 1 second, game notes, San Francisco Giants. When that happens, it's happening against a team like Miami, and it's like, you got to sweep that series. You just got swept. You walked into that series over the Giants, and you're thinking to yourself, we're going to sweep this series. They swept you. I mean, it's brutal, man. The bullpen right now, this is a major problem. In June, before yesterday's game, 6-6 with a 3.56 ERA, which is 16th. Just to put that in perspective, they've still got the number one ERA in baseball, the bullpen. But as far as, like, for example, in April, they had an ERA of 2.52. In May, they had an ERA of 2.43. And in June, they have an ERA of 3.56. So they're a run up the bullpen, which is the strength of this team. So that you cannot have that. Cannot have that. And then from May, in which they had a two, this is the starters, in May they had a 2.77 ERA. In June, starters have a 3.94 ERA. So they're a run up, over a run from May to June, and over a run from May to June as far as their bullpen. So pitching, which was carrying this team, and all, and we, you and I sat here and said, they got to hit. Pitching's going to be fine. Pitching has not been fine. Four or more runs, they're 30-13. Five or more runs, they're 24-7. So when the Giants score four or more, that's the key number, 30-13. When they score five or more, they're 24-7. So that was only their seventh loss all season long when scoring five or more. The bullpen just let them down in the series. The bullpen and the starting pitching has not been great in June. And so as we look at midseason grades, the one thing that's got to correct itself yesterday, which is not possible, but tonight against the White Sox or today against the White Sox, pitching's got to get back on track. Because we all know the way that the Giants win, pitching, timely hitting. We know they haven't gotten the timely hitting. But yesterday, you're going into that game thinking they got to just get one. And then Birdsong's not good. And then they get back in the game. They tie it at five. And you're thinking, okay, things are great. And all of a sudden, Miami explodes for two big innings. And you're like, what the hell's going on? And they get swept. So they got to go into Chicago. This has got to be a sweep. I mean, lots of times you go, two out of three. You got to sweep the White Sox. They suck. They're the worst team in baseball. And you just got beat by a team like Miami, who they have no playoff aspirations whatsoever, but you let them hang around. You let them get off the early starts. That's the thing. If you got off 3-0 on them, or at, like yesterday, 5-0 on them, then they just give up. They go into a turtle shell. You know, when's the next series? Where are we going next? They don't, whatever. That happens with all bad teams. But when you let them hang around and especially get a lead early, they gain confidence and go, why the hell not? We're already winning. Might as well just win. So that's brutal. That was there's no other way to put it. Yeah, the A's are on that schedule too. So it's over the next, and they got to just, this has got to be like, you got to sweep these series now, because now it's the White Sox, the Diamondbacks, and the A's. And then you get to the Dodgers, the Phillies, and the Mets. So this is, you look at key parts of his schedule over 162. Like I said yesterday, we don't do what we do in a 17-game schedule with the Niners where we take a pen out and we go win-loss. In a 162-game schedule or in an 82-game schedule like the Warriors, you start to look at key stretches. You know, like with the Warriors, you look at a stretch where they play maybe like four games in 6 days or something, or when they go on long road trips and go, oh, can they go 500 on this road trip? You kind of break down the whole schedule. Well, that's what we're looking at with the Giants right now. You've got to take advantage of these bad teams, man. Brutal teams. And you just got swept at home by the Fish. Can't happen. You're not going to be a playoff team. Not going to happen. And today they're not. Wake up this morning, they are not a wild card team. They would be out of the playoffs if the season ended. It does not. We're at the midway point of the season. So give me your thoughts on that. That is a, there's no way to spin that. That was a shit series. Brutal series. And the pitching has got to get back on it. Who do the White Sox have? Exactly. They have Luis Robert. They don't have Garrett Crochet anymore. They don't have Andrew Vaughn anymore. That's what I mean. I mean, that's a bad team, man. That's a bad team. So anyway. All right. Are you ready for midseason grades? We're 19 minutes into the show. Thanks for joining us. John Lund Unleashed, episode 177. The Giants are 81 games through the year. 81 games through the year, right? So with a 44-37 mark. Now, I said this yesterday. I said, if you would have told me yesterday through 80 games that they were a wild card team, I'd have said, yeah, that's good. But this one game and this sweep by the Fish has me in a negative mindset for the Giants. Just does. Because what's the worst the Giants could be? Out of the playoffs. Where are the Giants? Out of the playoffs. So yesterday, even being in the playoffs, I could say they were a playoff team, and they had been a playoff team for the majority of this year. They had been in that wild card spot for the majority of the year. So when they're not, which is right now, then it sucks. Then that's not success. So these are my grades. Scrutinize them as you will and tell me what I missed or where I'm wrong. So you like that lined paper there? Look how fancy that is. This is grades. I'm the teacher. So hopefully this all makes sense, but let's go through it and you tell me where I'm wrong. Hit them in the comments right underneath here if you're watching later. At John Lund Ready on X, I'm often there. Facebook, my personal page, you can hit me there. Comments under this show right here, though, is probably the best way to do it. So let's go through this. All right, overall, I gave him a B. That might be an optimistic number. Yesterday, I probably would have given him a B+, but they're one back in the loss of a wild card. They're 44 and 37. I was contemplating B-. Maybe I'm thinking more B- now that I look at this. They have had a generally good first half until recently. And so I don't want to forget that. Logan Webb has been great. Robbie Ray has been great. Up and down with the rest of the staff. Buster Posey pulling off, which I'll get into in a minute, Devers, is amazing. So I've got to give that grade there. I'm going to get into Melvin. I'm going to get into Burrell. I'm going to get into some certain positions, things like that. But overall, again, then I'll start breaking this thing down. I give them a B. But yesterday, I probably would have given him a B+. I should have probably given him a B- there. That sounds a little bit better to me, that little minus sign, because they're one back in the loss of a wild card. And the bottom line to this season is, and especially now that Buster Posey has traded for Rafael Devers, if they don't make the playoffs, at bare minimum, if they don't make the playoffs, this is a failed season. And I know that there's varying degrees of that, and that's a pretty strong statement in terms of saying a team had a failed season. And I know teams hate to hear that because, you know, well, we did this right. We did this right. We got Devers and, you know, he can't give us, you know, this should be a playoff team. This should be a playoff team every single year. They've got enough talent to be a playoff team. There's no question in my mind. You go out and you get Rafael Devers. You got to be a playoff team, period. Now, if you lose in, you know, a one gamer, if you lose in a three game series, I get it. Okay. But you have to make the playoffs. You have to make the playoffs. You've shown us that you can be a playoff team. So I gave him a B. Probably if I had to do over again, now that I'm looking at it, I want to give him a B-. So I'm gonna give him a B-. So scratch the B, give him a B-. Again, give me your thoughts. By the way, you want something on the screen? If you want your grade on the screen, give us a super. We'll get them right up on the screen. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Hit us with a super. All right, overall a B, probably should be a B-. Buster, you can only give him an A. He got Devers. They're probably gonna need more. Second base needs to be addressed. I don't know if Casey Schmidt, they did get some good news on Casey Schmidt, but how long really, even with Chapman out? So Chapman comes back, Schmidt goes to second base. I mean, that's not a savior to me. I mean, he's played better lately, but Schmidt, Koss, Fitzgerald, whatever. They need a second baseman, and I don't have a lot of confidence in Casey Schmidt, even though he's been better lately. But Buster gets an A for getting Devers, no question. I've said this before. I'm a really big Bob Melvin fan, only because he was really good to me when he was with the A's. He was really good to my son when he was with the A's. He's a really good guy in general. I've talked to him many times outside of being a manager where I've seen him at other sporting events. He's just an all-around great guy. Having said that, I can't, when we're grading the team, I have to just grade on what I've seen. And not only this season, but last season, Bob Melvin, one of the things about Bob Melvin, and you know this, that you really liked about him, was that he maximized talent. That's the best way to put it. When he was with the A's, he maximized talent. And now that he's with the Giants, he has not maximized talent. They have better talent than being out of the wild card chase, even one game. And it changes my viewpoint of what the team is. Right now, as we sit here, they're not a wild card team. And that's not good enough. You've got enough players. Now, maybe Rafael Devers changes things in the second half, hit that great home run last night or yesterday. Maybe they, you know, if they were in the playoffs right now, maybe I'd give Bob Melvin a C+, but he didn't maximize talent. And I'm kind of giving him a grade over the 2 years that he's been here. He didn't maximize talent last year. He's not maximizing talent this year. And as I go and give Pat Burrell a D below him, I'm going to kind of combine these things. And I showed you yesterday, I thought this was really fascinating. 2 years ago or 2 days ago, we showed you this OPS by position where the Giants were. So they're dead last with their catcher. He's not getting better with the stick. They're second to last at first base. I can't believe they're not last. They're one of the worst teams at second base in OPS. And this, I'm just talking offense. Willie Adames has struggled. Matt Chapman is hurt. We already said Bailey. Left field Ramos has been awesome. Jung Hoo Lee has fallen off a cliff in center field in June. And Mike Yastrzemski has been a little bit better than his normal roller coaster ride in right field. So you got to give it up to him. But by and large, Bob Melvin is the manager. He oversees everything, good and bad. The offense isn't living up to its capability. Players are not playing up to the back of their baseball card. That's on Bob Melvin. It's on Bob Melvin. The offense has not been good enough. And somehow when the offense isn't good enough, it feels like another part of the team falls apart. And we got to get into starting pitching in a minute, because as confident as I was about the starting pitching, it's fallen to about middle of the pack as far as ERA is concerned. The bullpen's still fine, and I know they weren't great in this series. I'll give you that. Rogers wasn't. I'd like to get rid of Sean Jelly, and it has nothing to do with the off-the-field stuff. I don't know what happened between him and his wife, but he's just not pitching well. And to me, it probably has to do with some of the things off the field, but he's just not pitching well. So give somebody else a chance there. They're starting to, because they don't want to burn out their bullpen of their four main guys, we're starting to see Bob Melvin trying to give other guys opportunities, and they just haven't come through. Jelly hasn't come through. Lacasey hasn't come through. Some of these secondary arms that they're using out of the bullpen, I get nervous every time Spencer Bivens comes into a game. I don't love it. So some of these guys who are going to have to eat up some innings in the second half in that bullpen have got to be better. Having said that, they have the number one bullpen here in baseball, so we can't complain too much. But go back to Bob Melvin for just a second. He's responsible for everything. The Matt Williams send, that's on Matt Williams, but Bob Melvin is the manager. They've had bad base running. They're just okay defensively. Lots of guys are playing below what their baseball card says they should be playing offensively. So Bob Melvin, to me, and this is a kind of a cumulative score, cumulative grade over the last couple of years, he's not getting the most out of the Giants like he used to get the most out of the A's. So I think I'm even being kind with the C, to be honest. Pat Burrell, love Pat Burrell. I've said this a million times. I'll just say it quickly one more time. I love Pat Burrell. Been on my show many times. Great guy, funny guy. I get it. It's not his fault. He's not swinging the bat. He's not, you know, he's not the guy with runners in scoring position, not getting the key hit, but he's the hitting coach. And right now, as I just pointed out, a lot of guys hitting below what they should be hitting. And even guys like Jung-Hoo Lee, who got off to a great start, you've got to solve those things. You know, Jung-Hoo Lee gets off to the kind of start he gets off to, and then he falls off the table. Or Tyler Fitzgerald falls off the table. Like these guys, Willie Adames hasn't figured it out. He's having better at bats. You know, the other day he thought he hit one out of the park, and it was a, you know, he got oracled. That's just the way it goes, man. You signed here. That's the deal. He needs to be better, and he's not. And Patrick Bailey is just a black hole offensively. Like, you've just got to make him kind of average, close to average. Can you do anything? They just need a new voice in there. And I know a lot of people are going to suggest it's Barry Bonds. Barry clearly doesn't want to do it on a regular basis. He'll go behind the cage. He'll hang out. He'll talk guys, all that kind of stuff. But I just, no, it's not going to be Barry. But they've got to get a new voice. And look, I like Pat Burrell. If he can go back to being the minor league roving hitting instructor or whatever. I don't know if that was successful or not, but it seemed like it. But at the major league level, they just need a new voice. You know, they just need a new voice. There's too many guys not hitting well to not say, okay, we've got to do something with this offense. It's just not good enough. They're middle of the pack as far as scoring runs, and we'll get to that in a second. But too many guys are hitting worse than their baseball card says they should. So D for Burrell. Offense in by and large, and then as soon as I get through offense, pitching, defense, I'll go out to the chat line. And again, if you want to get your thoughts out there, just hit me up with a super. Offense in general, I gave that a C-, 4.25 runs per game. Is not horrendous. 16th in baseball, as you can see in parentheses there. But it's the way they're doing it, and I think you know because we've talked about it a lot. They'll have a stretch where they'll score none, one, two, maybe three. And in fact, let me pop this up again here. So when they score three or fewer, they're 14-23. Three or fewer, 14-23. And you see that what happens with the Giants is they're not a consistent, it says right there, 4.25 runs per game. That's not horrible because if you score four or more, if you're the Giants, four or more, that means you're, what did I just say, 30-13. But what happens is they'll score 0, 1, 2, 3 for like a week, and then they'll score like 9 or 10 for a couple of games, and it brings the number up. There's just too many games in which they're incompetent hitting the ball. And especially with runners in scoring position, they're just coming off. I don't know what they were yesterday. I didn't look at the box this morning. They were 8-53 in their last eight games going into yesterday. This is a Giants problem all the time because of the park, but they've got to be better. They've just got to be better offensively. I know that 4.25 runs per game when I keep saying that the magic number is four. It's like, well, they're averaging over four, but they're really bad at home as far as scoring. And I was looking at that this morning, and they're middle of the pack as far as scoring runs. I get it. I know the ballpark that they play in, and that plays certainly a factor into only 4.25 runs per game, but it's the Jekyll and Hyde offense that they have. It's 10 runs, 8 runs, 7 runs in a series. Then it's 1 run, 2 run, 3 runs in a series. Like, it's like you just these great roller coaster rides that the Giants bring you on all the time. That's not the way. You know, you need to get some more consistency out of that offense, and that's what I'm talking about. There's just too many guys who are just not getting it done and are either not getting it done, period, or just way too inconsistent. But they're going on the road, so there's no excuse. No excuse. You're away from the ballpark now, so you got to score some runs. So I gave that a C- at 4.25 runs per game, 16th. Pitching B+, a week ago, maybe an A, but 3.42 ERA overall, which is 5th in baseball. Starting pitching is 3.82, which is 12th in baseball. But again, in June, they've just fallen off a cliff, as I talked about. Both as a – I wouldn't say the bullpen has fallen off a cliff. That's not fair. But in May, the starter ERA was 2.77. It's 3.94 this month. Bullpen ERA in the first 2 months, 2.52, 2.43, 3.56. So they're up a run both with the bullpen and with starting pitching this month. So starting pitching has got to be better. And just from a logical standpoint, and we'll get into a little bit more, we'll break it down a little bit more in the grade section on this wonderful lined paper. But as we said yesterday, Birdseye was a huge start for him yesterday. And garbage again. And so now you're starting to go, if you're Buster Posey and you're sitting up there and we're getting in close to July, all right, I got Devers. I could use the second baseman. I don't have to, let's see what Casey Schmidt can do once Chapman comes back. So is Casey Schmidt the answer? Probably not. So now I've got to go out and get at least an average second baseman. And oh, by the way, do I need to go get another veteran starter? That's why, remember a few weeks ago, there was an opportunity. I'm trying to think what it was, but there was an opportunity to bring somebody up, Carson Wisenhunt, when he was just pitcher of the week at AAA. And they brought up Tristan Beck instead. I know what Tristan Beck is. He's okay. He's not great. He is probably going to be a reliever for the majority of his career, long reliever, something like that, just on the edge of being in a rotation. Could be a 4-5 guy, could be a long reliever, whatever. But I think we're pretty established on what he is. He's not terrible, but they brought him up. But I thought to myself, man, you got a guy in Carson Wisenhunt who was just named Pitcher of the Week. You may need him later on in this season. Remember, this is before the Devers trade, before they lost pitching depth with Harrison and Hicks. So they don't have a lot of pitching depth at the major league level. And I thought to myself, why not bring up, and I said this on the show, why not bring up Wisenhunt and just see what he's got? And even if he gets his ass just rocked, then he could go back down to AAA and go, okay, this is what I need to work on. And then you can have confidence in bringing him back up. But now at some point, as you look at the last three spots in the rotation, none of them are set. Birdsong is pretty much shit the bed in his opportunity. He was really good as a reliever. And so I was pumping him up. First couple starts, pretty decent. And then, like I said, his last few starts, if you could just say, okay, he pitches 5 innings and then there's 1 inning that's bad, but you can't take away that inning. He's just lost it for like 1 inning or 2 innings at a time during his starts. And then for a few innings, he can be dominant. But that's not how it works. They all count the same. So he hasn't been good enough. Verlander, we know, he doesn't have a win as a Giant. He just has not been good, period. His numbers tell you over about his last 30 starts, he's a fringe number 5 starter in his last 30 starts, and he's 42. So it's doubtful he comes back and pitches to what his baseball card says because he's 42. So that's an issue. And then Landon Roop, at times you're like, damn, this dude has got it. Like, he'll drop a curveball on somebody and you're like, phew, guy's like a number 3 starter. And then he'll have an outing where you're like, what the hell was that? So that's their 3, 4, 5 starters on a team that wins with pitching and can't blow its bullpen out just quite yet. So that's an issue. So Buster Posey may be looking at it going, damn, I traded away my depth at the major league level in the Devers trade, which is fine. I'm 100% behind it. But he had to have confidence in what was happening at the minor league level, and maybe they're there. But I would have brought up Wisenhunt a couple of weeks ago when they brought up Tristan Beck to just say, let's see what this guy is. Maybe he's something. Because that's what you need right now. There's 3 guys in your rotation that you're not sure about. That's not good. And we're back to that whole thing where you got to put so much pressure on Logan Webb. Oh, finally, we're back to the Logan Webb spot in the rotation. He's got to give us 7. He's got to give our bullpen a break. You know, It's just that's constantly happening to Logan Webb, where it's like hits his start and it's like, dude, we need seven. We need seven, please. You know, we need you to give the bullpen a rest today. We, you know, you're our only consistent guy. And Robbie Ray was the pitcher of the month in May, and he hasn't been near that in June. So you could even say four spots as of this very moment where you're going, eh. Now Ray's going to be there, but the other three, I don't know what you do with them. And so Buster Posey coming up on the trade deadline in a month, it may be you need a second baseman. You need a, I'm not going to say he needs a, you know, 1-2 starter. Those are difficult to get. But it's possible to get four or five starters where you just say, look, this guy's going to eat six, you know, every fifth day. He's just got to eat six innings for us. Try to keep us in a game. You know, they need that kind of a guy. They just, because with Birdsong, he's got tons of upside, but I don't know what he's going to give you. Same thing with Verlander. Same thing with Roop. I don't know how long these guys, they could be absolutely great. Well, not in Verlander's case. He hasn't been yet. But there's outings where I think that Birdsong's going to get it. And there's other ones, or Roop's going to get it. And I'm like, eh. So they may need a starter too. Anyway, that's the pitching side of things. Bullpen, like I said, 2.86 ERA. They're number one, so you got to grade them at the top. Defense, and you know, if you think about the guys playing the positions, now first base, if Wilmer plays it a lot, he's not great defensively. He doesn't have a lot of range. Second base, Fitzgerald's not bad. Schmidt would be above average. Willie Adames is a roller coaster ride defensively at short. He'll make some great plays and then mess up some easy ones. So he's not exactly Brandon Crawford in his prime. Matt Chapman goes without saying, one of the best defensive third basemen in the league, if not the best. Patrick Bailey, throw the bat out for a second, really good defensively. Ramos is a bit of a roller coaster riding left, but let's just say at the worst, he's average. Jung-Hoo Lee is above average in center, and Mike Yastrzemski is a gold glove caliber right fielder. So just if you look at the pieces defensively for the Giants, they should be good enough. But if you look at the numbers, whether you agree with them or not, and I'm looking at defense right now in the middle of my lined paper there, it says defense. I gave them a C, and I think I'm looking more at the parts than the production, because outs above average, that's what OAA is. Outs above average, they're 24th. Errors, they've committed 44. That's 23rd in the league. And F percentage is fielding percentage, not anything else, fielding percentage. And that's 985, and that's 21st. So the numbers tell you that they're on the bottom half of defense overall. From a talent standpoint, they just should be better. I know at first they're not great, but, you know, they've got a good defensive catcher. They got a good, you know, second base, third base, left field, center field, right field. They should have a good, they have a good overall defense from an outfield perspective. So they should be better than what those numbers say. So I'm going to give them a benefit of the doubt, even though the numbers say they're near the bottom. I think they should be better. So I gave them a C. All right, so let's stop before we get to individual grades. Again, we're doing this because it's midway point of the season, 44 and 37. Overall, I gave them a B. Buster gets an A. Melvin gets a C. Burrow gets a D. Offense, C-. Pitching, B+. Bullpen's first in ERA at 2.86. Defense, I just gave them a C, and I'm being nice. And by the way, overall, it's a B-. They're not in the playoffs as of today. They are one game back in the loss column. So what do you think? We'll go through individual positions in just a second, but what do you think about the grades and what grade would you give the Giants at this point? And you can look at any specific point that I've brought up and let me know what you think. Tommy says this, and thank you for the super. A super gets you right onto the screen and first and automatic. Good morning to you, Tommy. Thank you so much for the super and the donation. If they miss the playoffs, Mummy Melvin needs to go. You might be right. Tommy, you might be right, because if I'm Buster Posey, and the one thing he's shown so far, and I really appreciate this, is there's friends and there's business. And Buster Posey's going, look, man, I have one job to do here, and it's for the organization. And like I said, I really like Bob Melvin. Business-wise, professionally, I've been none impressed whatsoever. If the main reason you hire a Bob Melvin is you looked across the bay for many, many years and you said, Oakland is playing better than their parts. That's what you should do as a manager. The sum of your parts, you should even be better than the sum of your parts. And right now, the Giants aren't. Now, maybe I'm overvaluing or being a homer, and I don't think I am, because that's not how I am. I don't have orange and black or black and orange glasses. I don't look at it that way. In fact, I'm very skeptical of players, especially when I see them every day, because I see the flaws. But I look at this team and I say to myself, this is a playoff team, especially in the National League. There are some really good teams at the top, like the Dodgers, no doubt, and the Phillies and the Mets, Padres have talent, but there's no way that this Giants team, given just overall talent in the National League, should not be one of the top six teams in the National League. Remember, three divisions, three wild cards. There are six chances. You got to be just one of the top six teams. Three wild card opportunities baseball's given you. Three, which I think is too many, but whatever. I like less because then we know who the haves and the have-nots are very early. Teams can trade, all those kind of things. Lots of teams think they're in it. That's why we don't have a lot of trading. But it, to me, that you sit here right now, do I have the standings? I don't know if I put the standings up. Let me double check just so you know what they look like today. But they are one game, believe me. They are one game out of the wild card. Let me see here. I don't think I put up the standings today. Maybe I did. I don't think I did. So we'll have to. Maybe starting pitching. No, I don't have the standings today. But you know what it is. I mean, the bottom line to the whole thing is that they're one game out of a wild card, and that's what it should be. They should be better than that. They're one of the top six teams talent-wise in the National League, at least to me. So if they miss the playoffs, Melvin needs to go. I think you might be onto something because I like Bob Melvin, but I don't think Buster Posey is going to find it great if they don't miss the playoffs. I think he would make a change. I don't doubt that at all. And it's too bad because Bob Melvin wants to be the manager of the Giants. Bob Melvin is a Bay Area guy. It would be great if it would work out. But if you don't, they have to make the playoffs, especially given the fact that Buster Posey walked into the powers that be and said to them, I'm sure in some way, shape, or form, this is clearly not verbatim, but somehow he said to them, if you give me Rafael Devers, if you okay this money, we will make the playoffs. And the powers that be with the money said, okay, we'll trust you on this, Buster. I think I said this the day the trade was made. There's no downside to this trade. But what Buster Posey said to them was, we will make the playoffs. And then they'll say, okay, I'm going to trust you. If they don't make the playoffs, not only is that bad for the organization, it's going to be really difficult, much more difficult for Buster Posey to convince them to spend more money. Because they spent money. And like I said, this is a contract that's a great deal for the Giants. After this year, there's $226 million left on the contract. Vlad Guerrero, similar aged player and similar talent player. I know he's a right-hander. I know they've got different kind of styles, but they're roughly the same age. He's got a $500 million contract. So Devers is as good of a hitter as him, is a year older, and is going to make about half over the span of the contract. So this is a great deal for the Giants. There's no the short-term downside, which is they lose the depth at the major league level in the rotation of Harrison and Hicks, which, by the way, there's depth there. I just don't know that it's quality depth. So if they were here, would Harrison get a shot at one of the spots in the rotation? He might. If he was here, would Hicks get another opportunity for a spot in the rotation? Maybe at some point, or a spot start here and there. But I'm not suggesting at all that they don't, you know, that they reverse the Devers trade. I love the Devers trade. But the one thing it did was put pressure on Buster Posey to get in the playoffs. And I don't know. Here's the other question you got to ask yourself. They added a lot of money in Devers, regardless of if it's a deal or not. Are the powers that be going, that's it, Buster. Like, we gave you the big guy. And you couldn't doubt it. You couldn't get on him if that was it. Like, we'll give you this money. But clearly at the deadline, they need a second baseman. Now, it doesn't have to be the greatest second baseman in the world, but just average second base play. And they might need a back end of the rotation starter, given that, you know, like I said, they should have brought up Wisenhunt a couple of weeks ago when they brought up Tristan Beck, given him a spot start, and said, what is this guy? Just so that they know for their own edification to say, okay, we know what he is. Now, maybe they think they do at the minor league level, but he's never been up here. He's never pitched at the major league level. How's he going to react? I don't want to know that in September. I want to know that now. I don't want to know that in a key game where I have an injury to somebody and I need a spot starter, and here he comes up and he's never pitched in a major league game. And the longer the season goes, the more the pressure builds. I want to know now. So anyway. Let's see. Pop some of these up here. This collective malaise stuff that has gripped the team the past couple of seasons might be due to Melvin's style. It's hard to argue that, Nathan. It really is. I like Bob Melvin. And look, you know, the thing that is really interesting about him, to be honest, is, and that's what we always try to be, he has been more of a red ass than I ever remember him being with the A's. And maybe the reason why is because, not that there's not pressure with the A's, there is, but it's almost like you are out of the spotlight to a certain extent. And when you're the manager of the Giants, there's more pressure there, and I know he wants to win, but he was much more laid back and I'm not going to say fun because that's not the right word. It's just, he was a little bit more laid back as the manager of the A's, and as the manager of the Giants, he is not. He's not. He's not that way. He's a great guy. Don't get me wrong, but I think he feels a little bit of the pressure. I'll just put it like that. All right, what else do we got as far as my grade so far? And again, we're through. We did overall Buster, Melvin, Burrow, offense, pitching, defense. We're gonna go by position in just a second here. And I want to get your thoughts on all of this. So, all right, let me continue on here. If you've got more thoughts, just hit me up in the chat room. Make sure, by the way, that you are subscribed, John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, as well as the Bay Area Sports Collective. By the way, you could be watching on Facebook, LinkedIn, X today, Instagram at John Lund Radio. So thank you for that. And if you want to get your thoughts on the show, hit me with a super. Come on over to YouTube and do that. All right, here we go. Position-wise, first base and second base, is there any debate? This was probably the easiest thing I did grade-wise at the midway point of the season. F. Spicoli, F. Like first base, ugh. Devers isn't playing there. There was a report or a rumor that said that he could, on the road trip, play a little first base. So we'll see. But there's just no question about it. Lamont Wade Jr. played a lot of first base in the first half of the year. Now they have Wilmer there, but you don't want Wilmer there. You want him to DH. So first base is an F. Second base, with the way that Tyler Fitzgerald has played the majority of at that position, the majority for the Giants, that's an F. And a major question mark going into the trade deadline if they could get somebody just average. Shortstop with Adames there, major, 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 major disappointment. In fact, I contemplated F, but he's hitting a little bit better lately. I mean, what is he at, like 215 above the Mendoza line? And I know batting average isn't what it was, but he's had so many opportunities. It seems like every time there's a key, they need a key hit, there he is at bat in his purple shoes. And I'm going, please start hitting in these situations, and he doesn't. So Willy Adames, there, I don't think there's any question about it. And I wouldn't go back on the signing, and I think he's going to come around. I think the ballpark plays a psychological factor with some of these guys, but I don't think there's any other way. I mean, I did. I contemplated F for Adames, not based on overall performance necessarily. If you look at some of the other shortstops in the league, there are certainly ones who have been better, or excuse me, have been worse. But based on expectations, based on contract, I don't know how you could give him anything above a D and really contemplating an F, because major, major disappointment. Guy who started out as clearly the number two hitter in the lineup at the beginning of the year, which that's your best hitter. And they've dropped him at times to five, to six, to try to give him those kind of things. I've even seen online people like, hey, let's give an ovation or something like that. Let's make him feel better. It's like, that's not really our job. It's like, if you give us something to cheer about, we'll cheer. It's nothing against Willy Adames personally, but remember on home opening day, he had the game-winning hit, and you're thinking, okay, this is going to be great. And the other thing, too, is I've seen breakdowns. MLB Network did one on him. It was Harold Reynolds, and he did this whole thing on Willy Adames about how much he struggled in the park and what hits would have been home runs, when he was in Milwaukee and all these kind of things. And I'm like, go look at his splits. He's worse on the road. So it's not like he's just crushing on the road and it's just the ballpark that's holding him back. He's shitty everywhere. So Willy Adames, major, major, major D, I mean, just a major disappointment. So he gets a D and almost got an F. C for the catcher, third base and center field. I understand and acknowledge the fact that Patrick Bailey is very important to this team. But when the robo-umps come, I don't know if Patrick Bailey's going to be the catcher of the Giants, because it's either next year or the year after. They're gonna do the system where you tap your helmet first, and then they're just going to go all out, just like everything is going to go AI at some point. They're going to go AI with the umps, and pitch framing is not going to be, I don't know, it might be even completely out of the game. And his number one skill that's made him a baseball player is his framing ability. He's good, not great throwing the ball. He's been good, not great. I mean, he's caught a lot of guys. But that hasn't been quite as good this year. He's good at blocking pitches. I'm not minimizing what a catcher has to do with the pitching staff. But his hitting has been so atrocious, you can't give him anything above a C. And again, I was thinking like C minus maybe, but I'm just giving flat out just regular grades here. If I had to grade Patrick Bailey, I'd probably say C minus, because the bat has been so atrocious. I made a joke the other night, or yesterday, I guess, on the show that, Matt Williams sent Jung-Hoo Lee the other night and was out by 50 feet because it was so shocked that Patrick Bailey actually had a hit with the runners in scoring position. I mean, it's just, his bat has been so bad. It's an automatic out in the lineup. And even if his defense is an A and an F is a C, and his defense has been good, his pitch framing has been good, and I understand the value of it, but the hitting tool is so bad. And we've seen great catchers in history who are just good defensively, and you know what they do? Eventually, they bounce around the league. That's what they do. They bounce around the league. Martin Maldonado, there's certain guys in the league that are really good defensive guys who have won gold gloves, but they don't stick in a lineup because rarely do you have a lineup that is so good that you can have right now with a DH. Rarely do you have a player so good defensively and that they can be a zero offensively and stay around too long. And Bailey's, you know, that's really the only position anymore. Like he used to be years and years ago, like a shortstop could be so good defensively that his zero bat was okay in the lineup, but you can't do that anymore. You just can't. Maybe the Dodgers could, the way that their offense is situated. Maybe the Cubs could, as good as their offense is. But most teams, I'd say 90%, 80%, maybe 90% of teams just couldn't do it. They couldn't have a zero in the lineup, and that's what Patrick Bailey's been for the most part in the first half. C for third base, Matt Chapman. It's not that I'm down on Matt Chapman. It's just, number one, he's hurt now. And I understand, again, his defense is great, and he'll get into grooves where offensively he's really hitting well. But that's what I expect out of Matt Chapman, and now that he's hurt, Matt Chapman, if you based it on a normal Matt Chapman season, and last year he was really, really good. What, he hit 27 last year, something like that? He's just okay this year, and he's hurt. So Matt Chapman gets a C. Jung-Hoo Lee, if he would have based it on like the first 6 weeks of the season, he'd have gotten an A. He's obviously a big upgrade. They had major defensive problems in center field last year. He has abolished those. But as far as lately, like I said, what he's hitting, 143 in June, something like that, he's been atrocious this month. Terrible. And hitters hit, coaches coach. But that's one of the things where I'm talking about Pat Burrell. You know, Willie Adames is not hitting. Jung-Hoo Lee is not hitting. Like some of these guys are just, they're not hitting. Patrick Bailey is not hitting. What's going on? They need something. So Jung-Hoo Lee is in a funk right now. I like the chance. I like the player. I like everything about him. But they signed him to what, a $112 million contract? He hasn't even been close to that. Dude's hitting around 250. He's got an OPS in the sixes. Again, but he's really good defensively. How many times do I have to hear that in the Giants lineup? He's got to be better. Right field, you got to give it up to Mike Yastrzemski. He's always gold glove caliber, especially in a difficult right field. And his peaks and valleys, there's no doubt about it, but his peaks have been much more than his valleys in the first half of the season, so you got to give Mike Yastrzemski a B. Even if I was giving pluses and minuses, I'd probably give Mike Yastrzemski a B+. He's been that good. DH has mostly been Wilmer Flores. Wilmer Flores, I don't know what else you could ask of a guy who had 4 home runs, 23 RBIs last year, and for some of the season has been one of the top run producers, RBI guys, big hit guys. And I don't have that number in front of me in terms of just, you know, his runners in scoring position, but it always seems like when he's up in a key situation, he gets a hit. So the DH, and again, I'd probably give him a plus if we were doing plus and minuses for Wilmer, probably a B+ for Wilmer in the DH spot. Elliot Ramos has been the best Giant. I mean, I think maybe not as far as pitching. The best Giant has probably been Logan Webb or Randy Rodriguez or somebody like that. But in terms of an offensive standpoint of all the position players, Elliot Ramos has been awesome almost from day one. And in the offseason, I kept saying, is he going to be the first half guy? Is he going to be the second half guy? And by the way, all-star voting is out. Let me pop this in just for a second in the middle of this, and then I'll bring the grades back. But they're not going to have any finalists there. First base, I have no issue with. Second base, they've been horrible. Shortstop, Adames isn't going to be better than any of those guys. Third base, you could make a debate for Chapman, but he's not healthy. Carson Kelly, Will Smith. Smith is just hitting the hell out of the ball, and Carson Kelly for the Cubs has been really, really good. Tailed off a little bit. Since Acuna came back from his injury, he's been ridiculous. Pete Cor Armstrong has led the Cubs. Teoscar, Juan Soto is coming back. Tucker has been an amazing trade for the Cubs, even though he's on a one-year deal. So you don't really have any debate there in terms of Elliot Ramos topping one of those guys in All-Star voting. You just hope that he's taken, because the thing is, Logan Webb's going to the All-Star game. Randy Rodriguez will have a tough time, even though his ERA is so good. They usually just take a bunch of closers. And I don't know that that Camilo Duval is going to be a closer chosen, but they should get a relief pitcher in there for the best relief ERA in baseball. So Webb's going, a reliever's probably going. I don't know if Ramos will go. He should go, but But if you look at those guys up there, a lot of those guys, unless you think Acuña hasn't played enough games, I mean, those guys are all having really good years. So even if Ramos, who made it last year, doesn't make it this year, you think to yourself, damn, you know. But he's been, as far as position players, let me pop the thing back up. As far as position players, he's been the best player on the Giants. Helio Ramos, awesome. Over the last, you know, first half of last year, the first half of this year has been absolutely great. Really good. So he's the only A of a position player. Relief pitchers, A. They got the best ERA in baseball, as I said, at 2.86. So their reliever has been the best in baseball. This series was not their finest moment, but I expect them to bounce back. I do not need to see Jelly. I do not need to see Lucchesi. I'd like to see less Bivens. But for the most part, this has been a really good bullpen. I get it. Duvall's a roller coaster ride, and he's blown some. I understand. But still, when you have the number one ERA in baseball, you should have an A. And then starting pitching, I gave a B-. You can tell me where I am on that. They've got two solid ones, and then there's some question marks, and they may even have to add one. But here's something really interesting. Let me throw this up at you. I did this. Actually, you know what? It's on my web, so let me share something with you. Let me share my screen because I thought this was fascinating. I looked at this morning. There's the cockpit sex story. I'll do that a little bit later. These are some numbers from starting pitching. So let me shut that. Let me just show you a couple of things, nursing. Quality start percentage is something that's important to me. So how are you guys doing? So you look at the Giants right there at, what's their number, 46%. So after the Phillies, who have had a crazy, that quality start percentage of 56 is high. But you look at from Tampa, Kansas City, Houston, and the Giants, they're all 48 to 46. That's about the same thing. Braves, same thing, 45%. So these, that's really good. That's a really good number. So almost half their starts are quality starts. That's a big number to do. And then pitches per game started is kind of a big number too, because that tells you how much you're helping your bullpen. 92 is the, there you go. So again, the Phillies have the most. That's telling you what their pitching staff has done. And then you look at the Giants right there. Again, 92, 89. I mean, it's about the same thing. But they're getting about 89 pitches out of their starting pitchers. So that's not bad. By the way, anybody who say, oh, man, you got to go. The max that they've pushed any starter to is 108 this year. So I like those numbers. You know, they eat some innings. They get some pitches. They're high on quality starts. So the starting pitching, which has still got to be better to this point, they've got to figure out 3, 4, and 5 in the rotation. Let me just add that one more time. They've got to figure out 3, 4, 5 in the rotation. But by the most part, you got to say pretty good. Lately, it's iffy. But Logan Webb has been great. Robbie Ray's been pretty good. You got to figure out 3, 4, and 5. Birdsong to me is absolutely huge. Birdsong is huge. In this thing, Roop is huge. I don't expect much out of Verlander. I just don't. I think he can be a fifth starter, but his last 30 starts have been not even good for a fifth starter. Like I said, he's something like 5-11 with an ERA, like 5.20, something like that over his last 30 starts. So he just hasn't been good. And so I don't expect him to bounce back. So there you go. Those are my grades for the Giants. I know that was long, but real quick, give me your thoughts on him. Hit me with a super if you want to get your stuff 100% up on the screen. But what would you change? Overall, like I said, I'm going to put a minus by that B. Buster gets an A. Melvin gets a C. Burrow gets a D. Offense, 4.25 runs per game, but it's a roller coaster ride. 10 runs one night, one the next. That's the middle. Pitching gets a B+, 3.42 overall, fifth. Starting pitching, 12th ERA, relievers first. Defense, I think the pieces are there, but they only get a C because outs above average, 24th. Errors, 23rd. Fielding percentage, 21st. And then I did it by position. First and second base, F. D for the shortstop. Catcher, C. Third base, C. Center field, C. Right and DH. Flores, mainly the DH, getting a B. Ramos has been amazing in left field. In fact, he's number one in OPS among left fielders. He gets an A. Relievers get an A. Starting pitching gets a B- with an asterisk by it because they got to figure out 3, 4, and 5 for this team to be a playoff team. And to me, bottom line and throw grades out, this has to be a playoff team, period, or Bob Melvin's in trouble. And if the offense keeps doing with this Jekyll and Hyde thing, I think Pat Burrell's in trouble because I think there's too many guys not playing to the back of their baseball card. They just need to be better. And guys who have either regressed or just haven't been good this year. Too many guys are regressing. Jung-Hoo Lee is regressing. You know, Patrick Bailey has not progressed. Willie Adames is starting to show some improvement. Might be too late. Like, it's, you know, I'm not saying they cut him or trade him or anything. I'm just saying let's go. He's got to get going, man. So what's the deal with Demo Lenore? Tommy, I know you wouldn't send me anything that wasn't true. Let me just double check this. So what happened with Demo Lenore real quick? Hopefully it's not domestic, is it? Please don't be domestic, because then it's like, oof. Oh, I just saw it. What happened here? Hang on. Because we have so much to do, but we got to, this is breaking news. Reportedly arrested by the Los Angeles Police Department, booked for resisting a peace officer. Why do you guys do this, man? Here it says right here, law enforcement sources tell us cops approached Lenore and a man named Marcus Cunningham when they observed vehicles double parked and blocking traffic. We're told they suspected criminal activity and noticed a gun in Cunningham's car. During the interaction, we're told Cunningham threw Lenore's car keys, and when officers asked Lenore to hand them over, he did not, was arrested on one count of resisting a peace officer, released on Friday morning, scheduled to appear in court next month. Okay. I mean, not wonderful, not great. Probably something that he'll pay a fine for or something like that. Anytime guns are involved, stuff like that, not great, but okay. It's not great, but it's not domestic violence. Arrested at 5:30 p.m., booked for resisting a peace officer a few hours later. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's the story. TMZ has it. I'll try to get it for you in just a sec here. 1 minute. Let me get it off TMZ and see if there's anything else that we need to know. That's not great. I mean, you know, this is the thing. This is what pisses off teams the most, to be completely honest with you. So the time between, and there was a speech given. If you didn't know this, there was a speech given. There always is by the 49ers, by every team. You got about 40 days until training camp. In fact, you know who addressed this? Christian McCaffrey, right before they left, after last OTAs, and said, guys, in these 40 days, don't be a dumbass. In these 40 days, please don't get arrested. In these 40 days, just stay on track, stay in shape, do the right things. And then a guy like Demo Lenore goes out and gets arrested. It's just, it doesn't seem or sound like it's a big deal. It's not domestic violence. It's not, you know, murder. It's not, but there's a gun involved, and that's not great. And yeah, it says arrested in LA. Here, I'm just going to share this real quick. But this is something that teams absolutely hate. Like, we're just giving you, there's 40 days before the season starts. Just stay on track and don't be a dumbass. Please, just stay on track and don't be a dumbass. That's all we're asking you. And guys can't do it, you know. And I like Demo Lenore as a person. He's always been cool. We've had him on the show a lot of times. He's a great guy. But it's like, dude, you're one of the leaders of the team. You can't be a dumbass and do this. And I don't care. I don't know what the story is. I don't. But my God, man. Here we go. I'll pop it up on the screen for you. There you go. Demo Lenore arrested in LA. Exclusive. I just read this to you, but just so you can see it. Blah, 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 blah. Keep reading. Okay. Keep reading. There you go. Suspected criminal activity. As when officers asked, so he was released on Friday morning, scheduled to appear in court next month. Okay. It's just a distraction. And, you know, we can downplay this all we want, and it's probably not a big deal. But remember last season? One after the other, after the other, after the other. And everybody's like, kumbaya. Everybody's feeling great about things. And now, Demo, in those 40 days that you're just supposed to, you know, please be an adult in these 40 days. That's what the Niners, that's what Christian McCaffrey said. They said it in the locker room. Said Kyle talked about it. Said, please, please, please be an adult. Be an adult for 40 days. And then one of your best players and leaders gets arrested for maybe nothing, but it's still stupid. And the organization's going, come on, man. You know, the organization's just going, will you stop? Don't do this. Anyway, dumb. So we'll see. It doesn't sound overly that big of a deal, but you just never know. I mean, there's a gun involved. Just putting yourself in dumb situations. I mean, it is. It's stupid. And they're trying to not do that. So, you know, and there's that 40 days. So anyway, there it is. There is the story. Thank you, Tommy Huxley, for letting me know about that. And thank you for the super. So we interrupt your Giants grades to give you Demo Lenore has been arrested. So there you go. Demo Lenore has been arrested. All right. Any more thoughts on grades or we can move on? We got some stuff on the Warriors. I got a bunch of stuff I got to get to today. So let me keep doing this real quick. We got stuck on grades for a while, but there are the final grades. Make fun of them if you will. Hit me if you're watching a little bit later on the comment section. Hit me up on X. What did you think of the grades? By the way, like I said, because they're out of the playoffs, I made that be a B- on the overall. So overall, Buster, Melvin, Burrow, offense, pitching, defense. all the positions after that. F's, D, C, B, A, relief pitching, starting pitching. There you go. Those are my grades at the midway point of the season. The Giants, not a playoff team, one back in the loss column at 44 and 37. There you go. All right. That's the interruption. And again, Dima Lenore has been arrested. Not great. All right. What else do we have today? We are on the chalkboard. That took a long time. The broken bat bit, I'm going to save that for tomorrow because we went so long in the grades. The broken bat bit, is, let's save that for tomorrow for the Saturday show. Let's get to the NBA and Dunleavy speaks. So let me give you a little background on this. So I am 100% convinced, and I've talked to enough people to know that Jonathan Kuminga is not going to be back with the Warriors. People can debate it and go back and forth on it, and many people do, and they're trying to get clicks, and I understand that. But believe me when I tell you, unless something changes, the people I've talked to think that Kuminga's leaving, and I said this during the playoffs. Jonathan Kuminga has got to want to stay with the Warriors. We're beyond the point of the Warriors controlling this situation. It will be controlled by Jonathan Kuminga. Players in the NBA, as I tell you all the time, have the most control of any players in any professional sport. So Jonathan Kuminga's got to sign the deal and want to stay here. Why would he want to stay here? He hasn't gotten the opportunity. He just told Anthony Slater on a piece that we talked about 2 days ago, I want my team. I want to see what I can do. I want to challenge myself. I want to be a main piece. Jimmy Butler's here. Steph Curry's here. Draymond Green's here. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You're not going to be a main piece. You're not going to be a centerpiece. They're not going to build it around you. They're not. And he knows that. And so he told Anthony Slater, nah, man, my time's now. I'm done waiting. My time is now. Now, you can debate that part of it all you want, but it's going to come down to Jonathan Kuminga wanting to stay a Warrior, and he doesn't want to stay a Warrior. So while the only team with significant cap space is Brooklyn, which people will tell you that, and so that's a reason why he couldn't move, that's irrelevant. Players move to teams all the time without cap space. Did Durant go to Houston? They didn't have any cap space, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't matter. It's Kuminga saying he wants to go to a certain team, and then the Warriors saying, well, that's what's the best deal we can get from said team? Now, I can't remember. Was it Pine who said earlier? I'd call Utah right now. I'd call Utah and say, and well, I'll give you the Ace Bailey latest in just a second. Ace Bailey doesn't want to go to the Jazz. I mean, does this look like a guy that is really happy to be in Utah? That was right after he got drafted. He's like, he doesn't want to go to Utah. He was supposed to show up over the weekend. He didn't. They sent notice to teams. Brian Windhorst, I'll give you that in just a second. They sent notice to teams in the top five, certain teams. He didn't want to go there. I got to think that Utah was one of those teams. So he's, you know, the happiest day of your life. Oh, really? Like if you had a wedding picture and that was either the bride or the groom and you were either the bride or the groom, you were the opposite person and that was their smile in the pictures, you might want to start filing divorce papers right now. Like, clearly he doesn't want to be there. And the other first-round pick for Utah, kid out of Florida, he showed up. This kid didn't. They're having their first practices for Summer League and all that kind of stuff and media on Monday in Salt Lake City. Bet the kid doesn't show up. So we'll see. That thing is going to get ugly. So somebody suggested that they call Utah and move Kuminga to Utah for this kid. That's an interesting one. You know, obviously, there'd have to be other finances because he'd have to sign a long-term deal in Utah. He'd have to want to do that. But they don't have a star player on that team. I mean, unless you think Lauri Markkanen's a star, and I don't. So, I mean, it could be his team if that's what he's looking for. I don't know if he wants to go to Salt Lake City, but that could be his team, and you could put some money in there to make things match, probably. So that's an interesting one. But knowing Danny Ainge a little bit, and his son Austin Ainge is the president of basketball operations, they'll probably just say, look, we don't think you'll turn down. I think the number at number five, if I'm remembering right, is $40 million. And he can go back into the draft next year, but I think they still hold his rights. So basically, it's a standoff. By the way, Utah's got leverage in that they're not going anywhere anyway. Like, Utah's not winning anything this year. They're not going to the playoffs this year. So they could call the kid's bluff and just say, look, if you want to turn down $40 million and then we have your rights again next year too, that's fine, but we drafted you. Now, there could be a couple of teams that could go to Utah with pretty enticing offers. So it's an interesting one. Anyway, let's stay with – we'll do baseball in a minute, but somebody brought that up, so I wanted to bring it up. But this is Mike Dunleavy finally acknowledging that Jonathan Kuminga has got to want to be with the Warriors for something to work out.
I can't stress out about it too much, but I think the main thing is making the right decisions, figuring the whole thing out, whether that's, you know, day one or day 10 or whatever it is. So – got to be prepared to, you know, take it as far as it goes. But yeah, the priority I would think for both sides is to get something done early.
how much is his desire to come back or not to come back going to play into, you know, beyond just the you know, the negotiations, money and years wise, just his desire to be here?
Well, yeah, it's important. I mean, I think from his end, ultimately, he's the one as a free agent that has to sign the contract.
So. Okay, let's stop it there for a second. I'll let him finish. So just so that we are all, and I've been telling you this for weeks, and I've told you this even during the playoffs when he's playing really well, and this is underreported. To sign the deal, he's got to want to be here. The Warriors don't hold the power anymore. And there's a misconception of that. But even like I always tell you that when, especially with star players, if they don't want to be somewhere, then the team trades them. That's just how the NBA works. So like, for example, we talked about this yesterday and I won't spend too much time on it, but like Giannis, if Giannis comes to Milwaukee and that's the shoe that everybody in the NBA is waiting to drop right now in the offseason, whether he says I'm staying in Milwaukee or I want out. So teams are kind of sitting back going, well, until Giannis makes a decision, I'm not going to make a decision. Now, Houston was like, we can get Kevin Durant. It's going to cost us Jalen Green, who was terrible in the playoffs last year. Dylan Brooks, who we didn't want anyway, who's a pain in the ass. And that's just there for finances. And we gave him the 10th pick in the draft, who ended up being a big center from Duke. They were fine with that. So they're like, you know what? We're not going to wait on Giannis. We can get Durant. We're good. We're in a window now. We can get Durant. We're good. The rest of the teams in the league who feel like they might have a shot at Giannis, they're sitting back. And they're going, okay, the big drop is Giannis. So like San Antonio, some of these teams, they're going to sit back and wait and see if Giannis stays. I doubt he does. So that's the big shoe to drop. But the reason I bring it up is Milwaukee might not be able to get anywhere near what they think is value for Giannis. But if Giannis says, I want out, they'll move him. He won him a championship. That's just the way that it works, especially with high-profile players in the league. Don't get me wrong. If you're like riding the bench and you're like, I want out, team's going, suck it. We don't care. But if you're an established player in this league, they're going to move you. That's just the way it is. And Jonathan Kuminga now has leverage to bring it back to him. He has leverage because if he doesn't want to be here, he won't sign and he'll tell the organization, move me, or his agent will. And I'd be shocked if his agent didn't tell the Warriors, we want you to move him. Here in the next few days or couple of weeks or whatever, whenever they get around to it, now that the draft is over, so it's going to be in the next couple of weeks, I expect Kuminga's camp to say, My guy wants out. So make the best deal for your team. And maybe it won't become public because then you lose leverage on a player and they don't want to do that. But the reality is that Jonathan Kuminga has not had the opportunity he feels he deserves. He showed it again in the playoffs. He doesn't fit with this team. Apparently the analytics say it. Steve Kerr has said it. I mean, it's all over the place. Mike Dunleavy's in this press conference right now trying to save leverage for his player, but it's becoming more difficult by the day. And so the key thing that he said right there is that no one is talking near enough about is the ball is in Kuminga's court. He holds the leverage. If he doesn't want to be here long-term, the Warriors have to move him. And what would indicate that he wants to be here long-term? He doesn't. He just said to Anthony Slater a couple of days ago, we'll work it out in Cleveland, I want my own team. Does that sound even remotely like the Warriors? Because it's not. So anyway, let's continue.
By him doing that, if that
happens. Let me do this real quick. So, go back to the question.
The one as a free agent has to sign the contract. So by him doing that, if that happens with us, that's reflective, I think, of his desire to be here. And, you know, we'll see.
So that's the whole point, is that he's not going to do that. He's not going to come back to the Warriors and say, you know what, I want to be here. I'll sign long term. Because what they're going to be able to sell him is in 2 years. That's what they're going to be able to sell him. In 2 years when Steph Curry's gone, in 2 years when Jimmy's gone, in 2 years when Kerr is probably gone, this is going to be your team in 2 years. Does anybody, and I'm not even talking about sports. We live in a microwave society. I want my dinner now. I want my fast food now. I don't want it in 20 minutes. I don't know if you watched it's on Netflix, I think, right now. It was Ray Kroc, I can't remember, called The Founder or something. It's about McDonald's. And you may have forgotten this, but they didn't used to be fast food 40 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever. It was like you went to a drive-in, you waited 20 minutes. Like that was fast food. Like this whole concept of McDonald's and the burger comes through and any fast food or In-N-Out or whatever the case may be. And they got all these people working back there and boom, 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 burgers are flying out, chicken strips, whatever. It's like, it didn't used to be that way. But McDonald's in San Bernardino, by the way, did it. And Ray Kroc went out there and he's like, what is going on? Where's, you know, like, no, we're putting your burger in a bag and let's go. Boom, 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 boom. Well, that's the society we live in. We live in a fast food society. We live in a microwave society. We live in I want it now society. I don't want to wait. I want a great meal and I want it in 5 minutes. Well, that's Jonathan Kuminga. At this point, he's like, look, man, 23 years old. I've sat around here for 4 years. I haven't gotten my opportunity. I'm going to wait two more. I'm going to wait 2 more years. No, I'm not. Because there's enough teams in the league, and they don't have to have cap space to do it. There's enough teams in the league where they can do a sign and trade. And the Warriors need something specific. That's the other side. How else could the Warriors get size? And you and I talk about this ad nauseum. You need size in the Western Conference to compete. How else are they going to get it? Who else are they going to trade? Who else has that kind of value, that kind of upside? Nobody. There's not a guy on the roster. So, I mean, just logically, the puzzle pieces, here's a guy who wants his own team. There's a bunch of bad teams out there. There's a bunch of teams. Like, if you looked at the draft this past draft, Kuminga would have went second after Cooper Flagg. Like, that's he would have had ahead of the kid that San Antonio took. So, I mean, he right now, if you looked at the draft and said, okay, Cooper Flagg's going to go one, but he didn't went ahead of any of these guys. He's 23, so that's old by those standards. But he'd been, like, the second pick in the draft. So, your point, Pine Needle, I think, is the one who brought it up. Your point of, like, Ace Bailey, I don't know if Golden State called and said, how about Ace Bailey? You know, I don't know what Ace Bailey's going to be. I watched some Rutgers games. I don't know. Guy seems like a prima donna and a pain in the ass, and he'd have to assume the Kuminga position, which is, hey, bro, you ain't playing for a minute. You're like Ace Bailey, you're 18 years old. You think you're going to crack the rotation of the Warriors this year? Because Steve Kerr ain't going to trust you. And plus, you've been a prima donna to this point anyway. So, nah, you're going to need a minute. So, I don't know, but that's an interesting one. So there's what's going on with the Warriors. This is what's going on. And again, I know Ace Bailey doesn't play at Golden State, but Pine made a great point, which is, why don't you call him? Now, I think that just knowing Danny Ainge, and you do too, he's a bulldog, man, and he's just going to dig his heels in. So this could take a minute. But all the rest of the first-round picks flew to their cities, held up the jerseys and all that stuff. Utah's got a thing going on Monday where it's the first practice for their summer league team. Their other first-round pick, a guard out of Florida, showed up. He's there. He didn't. So here's the latest on Ace Bailey, who his agent sent out things to teams in the top five that said, don't draft our guy. And I got to believe that Utah was one of the places that he sent those. And like I said, does this look like a happy man right after the draft? Not really. So here's the latest on what's going on with this kid.
We didn't have Utah on that list. Now, Jonathan Givony reported earlier that at least one of the teams in the top five was told, and maybe more than one, but we know at least one was told, if you draft my client, he is not going to report. Okay, he did not go to Utah today. Walter Clayton, their other first-round draft pick, did go to Utah today. Now, the Jazz have said that's not an issue. They allow their players to go, their new players to go home. But he will be expected to be there on Monday when their summer league training camp begins. So, let's see. But one thing I will tell you with confidence. Danny Ainge and his son Austin are not going to bend here. They are not going to get pushed around. They do not care with what the situation might bring. So the idea that they are going to pressure the Jazz into something, I don't think will be successful for Ace Bailey and his operation. But let's see how the next 72 hours plays out.
And again, just to add to that story, it's the fifth overall pick because I think that it was Bobby Marks who was on the set on the draft and said that the fifth pick in the draft gets $40 million. And they still have his rights next year. So Utah could play hardball. And like I said, if you know anything about Danny Ainge, he is a hard ass. He's a red ass. And he may say, look, we're not going anywhere with or without Ace Bailey. We're just going to keep the kid. And we'll let him sit out the entire year. We'll just tell him, look, you're going to come here. And that's just the way it's going to be. Now, the kid hasn't really earned any of this in terms of like, I'm going to be a superstar or anything like that. He's not, you know, Elway back in the day, you know, first pick by Baltimore and didn't want to go there. And we've seen it. Eli Manning forced his way out of San Diego, which I would have went to San Diego instead of New York, but whatever, had a good career. So guys have done this before. We've seen this in other sports. We've seen this in the NBA. Don't draft my guy. Kobe Bryant flat out was like, look, don't draft my guy. Did not want to be drafted. All those teams who passed on Kobe Bryant, they just warned him. Even Steph Curry, he didn't want to come here. And the Warriors are like, don't care. We're taking Steph Curry. And that was Don Nelson. Think about that. Don Nelson's like, you ain't pushing me around. I'm taking Steph Curry. And the next pick is where they wanted him to go. They wanted him to go to New York. So there was kind of a bit of a thing there where Steph didn't want to come to Golden State, but did. And things kind of worked out okay. So look, I don't know Ace Bailey. I just know that if you look at that picture, that kid ain't happy. And it's a great point by Pine. Why not call him? Just go, hey, you want Kuminga? But I'm just fascinated by the story itself because I know Danny Ainge a little bit, and Danny Ainge is a red ass, and he's not going to establish that the Jazz, even though it's a small market, are going to get pushed around. And so that's a fascinating one. But I think that's a great point. If the Warriors called and said, hey, we'll give you Kuminga and we'll work out a trade here. You know, it can't be Kuminga straight up for Ace Bailey. There's just not enough. They're not going to match as far as, you know, Kuminga getting a getting an extension. But, you know, there might be something there. That's kind of interesting. Give me your thoughts. I agree with you, Mark. He's not Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant came straight out of high school. Everybody knew what kind of talent he is. And that was a different era and a different age. It still was kind of like, are we going to take high school guys? And it was still kind of a little bit weird. Yeah, Dylan Harper is the name of that kid. And I saw yesterday. Hi, Chris. I saw yesterday where what Ron Harper made, and remember, Harper was on those Bulls teams, and he was a really high pick. I think it was by the Clippers. They went to Cleveland, then he went to Chicago. And they said he made $35 million in his career, and Dylan Harper's contract with San Antonio was worth like $56 before he even steps on the court. So that's kind of interesting. I don't love John Collins, but I think Utah's open for business on a lot of different ways. Kyle says, I think you're talking about Kuminga may not want the pressure of being in the front of the Warriors after the Hall of Famer's gone between that and how he's used. That's a great point. That's a great point. Because think about that. You're going to be the face of the franchise after Steph Curry leaves. That's a lot of pressure. That's a great point. Look, he's not going to be here. He's not going to be here. So, and you're starting to see cracks in the armor on the side of the Warriors, as you can see in that clip from Mike Dunleavy. But what he's trying to do is he's trying to save the leverage, and it's becoming more and more difficult to do. I mean, again, go back and read the piece in The Athletic. I mean, it's clear as day. He's not coming back here. He wants his own team. And that's the bottom line. That's a good point, though, about the pressure and trying to follow Steph. I mean, it's just like, oof. Let's see here. Is that it? I think so. The great stuff, man. All right, yeah, Kuminga, you're talking about. Yeah, Mark, you're talking about Kuminga getting plenty of minutes. Anyway, all right, good stuff. All right, a couple of things. What else? Random things happen throughout the show. I've done a ton of random today. Let's do a Caboose Pistol because we're about almost an hour and a half into the show, and I don't want to lose you. Hour and a half's about as much as you want to go because they tell you that people are like, meh, we've heard enough of you today. Let me do the sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose Pistol because we got a couple of good stories today. Let me shut that, open this, background music. I brought it to the top so we can find it easy.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose Pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
The old Caboose Pistol, everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose
Pistol? I know some woman who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John. Here's John.
All right, there you go. As I tell you, if we didn't have airplane stories, I don't even know if we could do the Caboose Pistol between Florida and airplane stories. That's probably 75% of what we talk about in the Caboose. It says, yes, crew members do have sex in the cockpit. Flight attendants confess, quote, the plane is on autopilot. That doesn't make me feel great. So then let me do this. The story itself I have right here. I've passed it about 50 times today. Like, no, that's the sex cockpit story. There it is right there. Come on, man. So here's what a flight attendant says. They're doing the deed at 30,000 feet while frequent flyers are sitting back and enjoying the ride. Freaky wingmen are too. This according to an in-flight insider who claims captains and crew members secretly have sex in the sky. Doesn't seem fair. They get mad at you for trying to do the, you know. It says, oh, hang on a minute. Here's how pilots and flight attendants join the Mile High Club. We're on the clock and you're in the passenger seat, says Sierra Misty. That doesn't mist. That sounds like a porn star name. Hey, on main stage, an experienced air hostess. That's what you're supposed to call them in a jaw dropping vid. I did not see the vid, by the way. I should have probably done that. Maybe I'll have that for you tomorrow. The not safe for work know it all explained. So there's this two pilots in the flight deck, and there has to be at least two people in the flight deck at all times on the plane. If a pilot is hungry or has to pee, he has to come out of the flight deck, but a flight attendant has to go in there to replace him. And that's how plans of initiation to join the Mile High Club are activated. I've never seen a flight attendant that look like that. The mid-air romps, which are not officially considered illegal offenses, which they should be, have been deemed icky by flight attendants such as Suzanne, blah, blah, blah. A couple got caught in a filthy aircraft, blah, blah, blah. Misty. However, isn't dismayed. The Skyway Siren, very nice term, teases that she's enjoyed some coitus in the clouds during a shift or two. But for great sex in the flight, she says aviators and attendants must adhere to strict rules. So essentially what she's saying is one pilot goes to the bathroom, that pilot leaves, there's got to be two in the cockpit at all times, and a flight attendant comes in there, and that's when stuff happens. I mean, but how long is that going to take? Like, what do you do? Like when you have to, when you have like a, when you share a room or something and you're in college, you're in a dorm, what do? Put like a tie on the door? Like, hang on a minute. What? So anytime we see like a guy, like a pilot standing outside of the door for any period of time, that we know what's going on in there. So she says the following: make sure you work with a crew that you can trust. Two, you pick a flight that you know has a route that's normally a smooth ride. Once you have those two things, the third is super easy. Have one pilot come out of the cockpit, flight attendant go in, and all the while, unsuspecting jet setters are cluelessly waiting for coffee services. Passengers have no idea what's going on in the flight deck. Plane is on autopilot. Surprisingly, her and hot, heavy revelations didn't surprise travelers, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I got a lot of questions. The first one that comes to mind is, so like, how long would that take? So, okay, the guy's got to go to the bathroom. He's going out of there. They know what's going on. Which, first of all, then I got to go sit in that seat. I'm not saying she's lying, but it's like, okay, you're going to have sex in here. You're going to put it on autopilot for a second. The sex has got to be incredibly fast. I mean, it's got to be like rabbit sex. It's got to be like, I don't know, less than 5 minutes, which is fine. It's like, look, I'm not a big cuddler. So, I mean, 5 minutes, okay, but it's got to be fast. And then the pilot has got to sit in those nasty bathrooms. They must return the favor, because then the pilot's got to sit in there and be like, all right, Bob told me it's going to take 5 minutes. So then he's got to sit in there for like the 5 minutes, and then he stands there for a minute, and then he kind of does a little knock on the door, and then she lets him back in. It's got to be fast. Got to be fast. So I guess anytime you see like a pilot or something not in the cockpit, you would then know that there was sex going on. So there's that, I guess. All right. Anything else there? The only other thing I wanted to mention, give me your thoughts on that, by the way. The only other thing I wanted to mention, I'm a big Brad Pitt fan. Sports movies, by and large, I mean, there's some good ones, but I'd say if you did percentages on movies, maybe they're 50-50. I'm not really looking forward to this one. An Awful Announcing, who I like, says F1 is a Brad Pitt vehicle that takes too many familiar turns. So I'd like Brad Pitt. I'm probably going to wait for that one to come out. I'm not going to go see it, because I do like Brad Pitt, but I don't, you know, I don't know. I don't know that I've ever liked a racing movie, even though they said, I guess there's a bunch of AI on it and it's supposed to be realistic and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to watch that, but there's that too. Just want to mention it. Pine says cockpits have a small spare seat behind the captain on most air. That's true. What happened to wasn't that a Canadian Airway, right? That was like they were Canadian, right? Isn't that right? In the old Pan Am days, it used to be coffee, tea, or me. Yeah, it used to be real. Planes used to be awesome. They'd give you food. You had to dress up nice when I was young. We'd fly across the country. You know, we'd go to like Chicago or something. Nowadays, they throw some peanuts or some pretzels at you. You're lucky to get a cup of water. You know, they say you can't bring booze on. I got news for you. I bring booze on every flight I'm on. Like, once you pass the thing, and then, you know, it's like, see ya. You know, how much for that fifth right there? They give you money. They'll sell you booze. Anyway, anything else? All right. I think that'll do it for today. What I'm saying about the cockpit thing is that doesn't make me feel good. That doesn't make me feel good at all. Like, I don't want to be on autopilot, man. Something goes wrong and you're, you know, mid-flight, if you know what I mean. It's like, come on, man. I don't like that. Yes, I'm going to text Larry right now. I will let you know as soon as I possibly know. If Larry's in, I'm in. So, Fuji, I will let you know as soon as I possibly know. In fact, let me text Larry while we were live here. I have not texted him this morning. Didn't have an opportunity, but I will right now. And keep those alerts on, and I will let you know on a bottom of the pint against the White Sox tonight. Thank you, Fuji, for the donation. You are awesome. You are the best. And plus, I love having Fuji in on the bottom of the pint. He's always hanging out on bottom of the pint. So I will let you know bottom of the pint. Keep those alerts on, please, please, please. And I will let you know on that. Thanks for hanging out today. Good time had by all for episode 177, Swept by the Fish, mid-season grades. Let me just pop those up one more time. Agree, disagree, tell me where I was wrong or right. There you go right now. Hit it right underneath the comment section here, or hit me at John Lund Unleashed. Those are your Giants grades through 81, 44 and 37, one game out of a playoff spot. That was the front of the show today, show cover today for episode 177, mid-season report. And I did give you those grades, so that is that today. Got into a little bit of discussion. The broken bat bit I'll do tomorrow, mid-season grades. Dunleavy speaks. I think Kuminga is gone. Warriors second-round success. I didn't pop that up. I'll do that tomorrow. I'll do the second round success because they did have their picks yesterday. Giannis, I'll get into. Ace, we talked about random stuff. Caboose Pistol, the Caboose Pistol sex. I'll do the first job thing tomorrow, too. Geez, I got like three things I got to do on the Saturday show. So we have the Saturday show. I'm going to hit up Larry Kruger right now for Bottom of the Pint, and I will let you know. Please have those alerts on at John Lund Unleashed, and I will let you know there. Hit us up on Bay Area Sports Collective. Thanks for watching on X this morning, LinkedIn, and Facebook as well. Everybody have a great rest of your Friday.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!